Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Coming up today, I'm sure you heard the news, devastating. A woman and her unborn child shot and killed on the streets of downtown Seattle. We'll talk about what we know right now. Also, our friend Jonathan Cho, who covers homelessness for Discovery Institute, spoke to a homeless woman who's been homeless now for some time with a tiny infant. He's met her in the past, found out she's still homeless, living in the Ballard neighborhood of Seattle. He went and spoke to her, and I'll tell you, his story is heartbreaking, but it's really eye-opening about the challenges that some homeless individuals who want help face on our streets. On the same subject, the King County Regional Homelessness Authority sent out a three-word tweet that I think perfectly sums up why it should be disbanded as part of the homeless industrial complex. And then later on, San Francisco Mayor London Breed goes from woke to awake. I'll play a clip from her that Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell should just take her words and speak them into the ether here, because that's what we need. London Breed, I was not a fan of hers for the longest, but now she has started to wake up. If you're not a subscriber to the show already, please do become one. UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. You can support this mission, this movement to give common sense a comeback for as little as $5 a month. Also, just to let you know, we're going to do a meet and greet this Sunday in Arlington, Washington. Please stop by, say hello. We're going to be at Elemental Cider Company in Arlington from 2 to 4 p.m. Yes, on Father's Day, June 18th. And we will have copies of Referendum 101 there for you to sign. You don't have to sign. If you don't want to, you can still come by and say hello. But what we want to do with R101 is send parental rights to the ballot. As a parent in Washington, gives you an opportunity to reclaim your parental rights and stop the government from legally kidnapping your child and letting them be at a shelter without knowledge of where they are. Okay, let's start with this. Gosh, this story, you know, this happened yesterday morning, but I don't think we really knew the true extent of how bad it was until the afternoon. A woman in her mid-30s and a man in his mid-30s sitting in a Tesla in one of the busiest areas of downtown Seattle, the Belltown neighborhood, when they were shot. And it turns out the woman was pregnant. She is dead. Her unborn child is dead. The male who was shot in the vehicle is recovering. It sounds like he's going to be all right. But this is just devastating. And again, you know, I hate to even think about the MLB All-Star game, but I think it underscores that downtown Seattle is not a safe place to be. And there's still a lot about this that we don't know. Certainly one of the big questions is, was this just random? Was this just a random occurrence of violence, which is the scariest kind? When you really think about people just minding their own business, be it the tourists who we've talked about visiting the city who've been attacked. If you're working downtown, you know, I always think about that Amazon employee who got hit in the back of the head with a baseball bat. I think about the 60-something-year-old nurse who got pushed down a flight of stairs while she was using Westlake Station. And so, I mean, worst case scenario is that this was just a completely random attack. Now, there is, in absence of information from the Seattle Police Department, there is a little bit of information we have about what happened in the minutes leading up to this, because there is this is the first time I've actually ever heard about this particular app. There is an app that sends alerts if you're signed up to Citizens. If something's happening in your area, you get a little alert and you can kind of, you know, be on the lookout for what's going on. So at 10:36 a.m. yesterday on the Citizen app, there was an alert put out saying, man with rifle jutting from backpack. Officers have made eyes on a man who appears to have a real rifle in his backpack. So again, that's 10:36 a.m. And then the reports started coming out about a shooting, and the Seattle Police Department at 11:16 a.m. said police investigating a shooting near the intersection of 4th Avenue and Lenora Street. One victim located with a gunshot wound. Please stay out of the area. More information when available. So it seems like common sense would tell us that those two things were related. Now, again, it sounds, for all intents and purposes to me, it sounds like this was a random incident. Obviously, we're waiting for information or confirmation on that from the Seattle Police Department. They did arrest someone. That person is in custody at the King County Jail. But again, a woman and her unborn child dead. Absolutely horrific. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, in the evening yesterday, he had a press conference that was pre-scheduled that had to do with sending a housing levy to voters. And as soon as he came up to the microphone, he did mention this.
Within the last several hours, we suffered a tragedy on downtown, on the streets of downtown Seattle. You'll read more about it tonight or tomorrow. It involved a shooting and a very fortunate situation. We don't know what motivated it. We do have the suspect. We do believe at this point, I think a life was lost, and it's very sad. And I don't generally try to start off a great event with that kind of sad news, excuse me, but I think it's important to ground this celebration into what's happening in our city, that they are relying on us. They're relying on us for hope to deal with these complex issues of recklessness and violence, housing insecurity, and we have to be rooted in love and compassion.
Yeah, I mean, we are counting on you, and visitors to the city and people who work downtown, who live downtown, are counting on you as well. This man and woman in this Tesla and her unborn child, we're counting on city leadership as well to keep them safe in an area of the city where they should be safe. So we are going to be obviously eagerly awaiting information from not only the Seattle Police Department, but King County prosecutors when documents are released that talk about whatever a motive may be. I will just say, though, this morning already, more shootings in Seattle. Jeremy Harris, who I believe is with Como News, he sent out a tweet a couple hours ago saying three people have been shot in Seattle this morning. The first shooting happened near a bus stop on North Aurora Avenue. Two men in their 30s were shot, both expected to survive. We also saw officers in a nearby homeless encampment. And again, we've said this over and over and over. The vast majority, when it comes to the biggest tie that shootings have to any single issue, be it gang violence, domestic violence, homelessness, the single biggest tie is to homelessness. Either the victims are homeless, the perpetrator is homeless, a shooting happens, a homicide happens near, in and around a homeless encampment. And it's one of these other reasons why I've said it's not compassion to leave people living in the streets in those conditions, because oftentimes they are disproportionately likely to be the victim of a violent crime, including a shooting. And that's why, you know, these whole stop the sweeps people and all of that, to me, it's just outrageous. I will also say about this shooting scene, there were some reports coming up and through the scanner that they thought there were even more victims. You know why? Because there were people nearby on the sidewalks overdosing. So near where the shooting happened, there were people who basically looked dead because they were overdosing on drugs. So there'd been a shooting, so Seattle police were confused about just how many victims they had. Let that sink in. That's insane. And this is supposed to be a beautiful, active part of the city. We're expecting tourists from across the country to come in a month for the MLB All-Star Game. And to me, the MLB All-Star Game is the furthest freaking thing from my care and concern. I mean, you've got pregnant women being shot to death in broad daylight in what used to be one of the most wonderful cities in America. I mean, for the love of God, I've said we shouldn't invite anybody to our city. We can't keep the people who are here safe. Insane. And so this is obviously heartbreaking. And, you know, you hate to make it political, but at the same time, like, politics matters. The courage of those in charge matter to hold people accountable, to deal with the crisis on our streets around substance abuse, mental health issues, homelessness, etc. So a woman and her unborn child dead. And I saw then this morning, actually Jonathan Cho, our friend who covers homelessness for Discovery Institute, fixhomelessness.org, he messaged me about another story involving a woman and in this case, an infant child. And this one really struck me because I thought, you know, here we lost to a shooting, a woman and an unborn child yesterday. And this story, I think, is an opportunity to save a woman and her infant child. So Jonathan Cho, he's always out and about at homeless encampments, talking to people and hearing their stories. And I think it was around a year ago where he encounters this woman with a baby at a homeless encampment. And he stops and talks to her. And she doesn't seem like she's strung out on drugs. She doesn't seem like she has mental health issues. And you know, he's talking to her at the time a year ago. Well, he starts to get some texts from people saying, hey, there's a homeless woman with a baby in a tent in Ballard. So Jonathan Cho gets in his car, drives down there immediately because he cares. As much as the Seattle activists want to vilify Jonathan Cho, he cares about these people. And I want to play for you the story that Jonathan Cho put together, because it turns out it's the same woman who he'd met a year ago, who had a baby. Now the baby's around one year old. And he sat for a while in this woman's tent and talked to her about what's going on and the real challenges that she has navigating a complete a failure of a system when it comes to the homeless industrial complex. Here's his story.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, just checking in.
Hello.
Sorry to bother you.
No, you're okay.
Hi. I'm a local journalist.
Oh, yeah. I've seen you before.
I know. I think we've talked.
Yep. Actually, we have.
And
I had the little baby over there.
I know.
Yeah, look.
Oh, my gosh. Is that your baby?
Yeah. It's my baby. That's how big he's got. I raised him on the streets.
How long have you been at this location now?
For about a month now.
And nobody's noticed?
I mean, people have noticed and stuff. It's just, it's all about referrals and stuff like that and getting on waiting lists and all that good stuff. So
tell me the journey.
From there, a church helped us get into a hotel for like a couple months. Okay, and then I finally got hooked up with a caseworker and said that I had to go look for the apartment. Okay, so I went and found me an apartment, and I ended up going to this apartment for like 2 months and then moving because of my ex-husband. And then I moved back here because of my ex-husband. And now we're back on the streets and stuff.
What happened to your husband?
I told him to leave because I was tired of him thinking that my life is a game.
So where is he right now?
I have no idea.
So you've split with your husband?
Yes.
Okay, and this is Oliver.
Yes.
Do I have permission to show Oliver?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay.
I did it for his safety. He just turned one last month.
Okay.
So,
Kimberly, you agree that, you know, we can't have a baby boy like this on the streets.
I agree. I agree completely.
Okay. What would you like to say to officials right now who are hearing this? How can they immediately get you into a situation that works?
A tiny home would be great, or like a permanent hotel would be awesome.
Okay.
You know?
Right now, do you don't have a job?
No, I don't have a job.
Do you get any benefits from the state?
I get food stamps, but like I said, I don't get food stamps for another couple days, so I'm kind of struggling on the food situation.
Do you have enough diapers? I mean,
I got enough diapers and formula and stuff for the baby. So I got everything I need for him. I just need stuff for myself.
Okay, so this is all the baby's clothing.
Yeah, this is all our clothing. This is
all your clothing. Okay, and
those are toys. That's just a little toy corner.
So how do you spend your days then?
Oh, we just sit here and chill, and like I have a neighbor.
Yeah.
Her name is Ginger. She like became my little adopted mom, and she hangs out with me and plays with Oliver and just helps me out all together spiritually and like, yeah.
Doesn't Oliver need like medical attention or shots or anything?
Yeah, he's getting his shots this week on Thursday.
So where do you go for that?
I go to Swedish.
And they just take him?
Yeah, they'll take him. They'll take him and they'll give him his shots. And he hasn't been sick. He's been a really healthy baby. So, but he gets his shots on Thursday.
Gets his shot on Thursday.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, such a beautiful gift.
He is a happy baby. He's well taken care of. I clean him all the time. Like, we always take showers and stuff like that. So,
okay. Okay. So, do I have your permission to get the word out?
Yes, sir.
That you need help, and I have your permission as well to tell your story.
Yes, you are. Yes, you do.
Okay. We're going to continue to walk with you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Kimberly. All right. Bye-bye.
So that is our friend Jonathan Cho. You can watch his work at fixhomelessness.org. Follow him at Cho Show. That's heartbreaking. That's tough. And God bless Jonathan Cho, to be honest. I mean, the care and concern that he shows for her when other people have not. And look, I don't know the woman's full story. You know, she's told Jonathan Cho that she's not using drugs, etc. I don't know. I mean, she might be. She might have been at some time. I don't know the whole background. All we know is what she's telling Jonathan Cho, and that she's sort of been cycled in and out of this system that isn't really working very well. But when I look at her and look at this little baby, all I can think about is if Seattle and the tens of millions of dollars that we spend a year on homelessness can't help that woman, then we're screwed. Then who can they help? If you can't get resources to a woman with a baby who doesn't seem mentally ill, doesn't want to be living in those conditions, says that she would take some sort of more permanent situation so she and her son don't have to keep moving from place to place. If you can't help her, then who can you help? What a failure. What a failure of this system. And Seattleites want to keep taxing themselves to give money to what? The King County Regional Homelessness Authority, which we'll talk about later on in the show. Where is that money going? That woman's been, for the most part, homeless with a child for the better part of a year. Jonathan Cho sent out a long tweet tagging everybody under the sun, trying to figure out if somebody can help her. He tagged the King County Regional Homeless Authority saying, please send outreach workers. He tagged the Seattle City Councilman for that district, Dan Strauss, saying, please personally go to this tent and help out this mom and her child living on the streets of your district. He tagged the Washington State Department of Children, Youth, and Families. All the other council members, the governor, the mayor of Seattle, he tagged everyone. And I hope that there's an update on this story. It shouldn't take Jonathan Cho jumping in his car when he gets tips from citizens and driving down to check in on this woman and putting the word out on Twitter. I saw a few people responding saying, I've called 911 about this woman and her baby more than once. Citizens calling 911 saying, hey, there's a woman with a baby living in a tent. Can you send help? Come on, this is absurd. What are we spending money on? What are you doing? I get it that there are challenging homelessness cases, particularly when it comes to the severely mentally ill and the severely drug addicted. The people we see walking around like freaking zombies on Third Avenue. I get it that those are particularly difficult cases because someone has to be in their right mind to accept help and to keep shelter. I get it. This is clearly not one of those cases. This is clearly a woman who has her faculties, who cares about her child, who had some difficult situations with her husband. Surely, honestly, if the government cannot get her help, then we ought to defund every single entity that gets taxpayer money to deal with homelessness and ought to put it strictly in the hands of the private sector. That is devastating. Good for Jonathan Cho for going down there, for caring more than our elected leaders do. And I will be following up with Jonathan Cho today to see if there's any update with this woman. But like I said, you know, we lost a woman and her unborn baby in an act of violence on the streets of Seattle yesterday. This is an opportunity to save a woman and her baby. And I really hope that the city of Seattle can figure this out. Shouldn't even take 24 hours, if I'm being frank. Okay, coming up next, we are going to talk about later on, we'll talk about the King County Regional Homelessness Authority and a tweet they sent out that just has me up a wall. We'll also discuss remember the spa story we talked about yesterday, a transgender individual who sued to be able to access a spa that's only for women because they go naked in there. Well, there's a protest planned. This is so dumb. A protest plan to support the spa, but Antifa is going to show up and counter-protest the protesters for the sake of women or something like that. So we'll talk about that coming up. But first, I've been discussing First Mark Insurance. I'm now a proud member of the First Mark family. Mike and I took the First Mark challenge like thousands of other people have, and we ended up getting much better insurance for about the same price. So it was really a no-brainer for us. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, says when they have people go through the First Mark challenge, a lot of them do realize that they are woefully undercovered, and there are consequences for that.
So the risk is, if you get in an auto accident and you don't have enough coverage, you get in an auto accident that's your fault, and you don't have enough coverage, then they can come after you personally for any additional amounts over and above your coverage limit. And that means things like your retirement plan, or come after your equity in your home, or garnish your wages. So it's a big thing. And like with you and Mike, I just think most people haven't had someone take the time to explain it to them in terms they can understand and show them the how inexpensive it is to actually get the correct coverage.
Yeah, so the way the First Mark Challenge works is you, if you go to their website, firstmarkinsurance.com, take the First Mark Challenge, click on the button to take it. You're going to provide them information on your current insurance. They're going to do a review of it. Then they're going to come back a few days later and say, hey, here's either you have insurance you don't need, that you don't need to be paying for, or we think you need better insurance, and they're going to present that plan for you, and then that's it. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't pay First Mark Insurance anything. You just pay for the insurance if you want to switch plans. And so you're either going to save a bunch of money, or like Mike and I, you're going to get much better insurance for about the same price, or you walk away and they tell you, yeah, you got pretty good insurance as it is. I'd stick with what you have. It doesn't cost you anything but a little bit of time. So take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, First Mark Insurance. They work for you. Okay, an update to the Olympus Spa controversy that is all over national news now. So we talked about this on the show, was it yesterday or Monday? Wow. Yesterday. Nicole says it was yesterday. So there's this popular spa, and this one's in Lynwood. It's called the Olympus Spa, and it's women only because you go in there and you get pampered. And I've been told, I talked to someone yesterday who said it's like a spiritual experience, just a place you can go relax. And yeah, you can be naked. And so this transgender woman, so born a male, hasn't had any sort of surgeries. No evidence that this person has ever been to the spa, but wanted to go to the spa, apparently, was invited like with a group of friends, never went there, ends up filing a complaint with the State Human Rights Commission, and then the Human Rights Commission, you know, rules in their favor saying, yeah, they need to be admitted to the spa, and then just recently a federal court judge in Seattle said, yeah, it would be discrimination not to allow this individual in the spa. And this is a traditional Korean spa, right? And so the owner is like, I don't know what to do, because allowing someone in with male anatomy to walk around naked, you don't have to be 18 to go in the spa. And so it just opens the business up, the owner thinks, to liability. And so it's this whole crazy situation. So there is this organization that said, hey, let's go out to this spa and let's, you know, protest in so many words, but in support of the spa and the spa owner. The organization is called Sovereign Women Speak, SWS. They said, we are meeting Saturday, June 17th, so this Saturday, at 2 p.m. at the Lynwood branch to protest the ruling against the Olympus Spa. Join us. And then they invited a bunch of journalists and people to come, and I, including me. They said, Brandi Cruz, we'd love to have you cover this event. I can't cover the event, but it's not that I wouldn't want to support the spa, because I think what's happening to them is ridiculous. But apparently Antifa, or as I found out, Trantifa. There is a transgender branch of Antifa, which is news to me. They have now said, well, screw these people. We're going to counter-protest their protest in support of the spa, which this is really shaping up to be quite an ordeal. But there's an individual on Twitter who, he must know me because I'm blocked from before. Like, I went to look at this person's Twitter account and I'm blocked, so they must not be a huge fan of mine. But their name is @RiotDad on Twitter. He describes himself in his bio as your favorite Pacific Northwest everyday anti-fascist punk rock dad. He, him, they, them, comrade, anarchist, mutual aid in a mutual combat state. We keep us safe. Okay. So he puts out this flyer saying, call to action. Andy No, who's an independent journalist who covers Antifa, who provides kill lists to Ottawafen, has been invited. If you can attend, show up. If you cannot, please share. And they say, the flyer says, counter protest against turf rally in Lynwood, which I looked up the definition of turf yesterday. It's transgender exclusionary radical feminism. So basically, feminists who don't support transgender women being included in women's spaces. And apparently that's a very bad thing. And so it says, you know, show up. It says, and this is what got my attention. SWS, that's Sovereign Women Speak, who's holding the pro-Olympus rally, is a transphobic group of white women pretending to be feminists. They invited fascist scum Andy No, Brandi Cruz. Now, is that, am I fascist scum? Or is it, they invited fascist scum Andy No, comma, Brandi Cruz. Am I trying to figure that out, scum?
I was deciding that myself. I think he's just talking about Andy. Okay.
All right. They invited fascist scum Andy No, comma, Brandi Cruz, comma, an anti-groomers group, comma, and others to their protest at Olympus Spa, which has discriminatory practices denying access to trans women. Okay. So when I saw that and I was like, wait, I was invited? I was like, that's news to me. And then I saw the tweet where they said, Brandy, come cover this. Yeah, just because somebody tweets at me inviting me to something doesn't mean I am covering it. But, you know, I was looking at this guy's account, the Riot Dad. And as much as I hate to show the people on the live stream these pictures, I just thought you might want to see some images of the individual who says that they are truly the ones standing up for women. I will say, and I try not to jump to conclusions, I don't think at Riot Dad is mentally well, although I learned from their pictures that they enjoy sock puppets, guitar, are very anti-Nazi, which is a good thing. You know, everyone should be anti-Nazi. And sometimes cover their genitals with socks, which might go hand in hand with the whole sock puppet thing.
Wow. His kids are so lucky.
Look, maybe he's a really good dad, but I gotta say, his social media terrifies me. But yeah, that's the kind of person who's gonna be out protesting a spa, a traditional Korean spa that says, hey, this is a women-only nude spa, and we have people who might be uncomfortable if there's a biological man in here. So this is where this is all come down to. Pretty ridiculous. But no, I won't be there on Saturday, sadly. As much as I really enjoy the ninja cosplayers and watching them out with their umbrellas and stuff, I won't be there. I hope it all is peaceful, though. You know, I'm all for peaceful protests. If you want to protest in support of the spa, if you want to protest against the spa, as long as you keep it protest, it's a beautiful thing about a First Amendment right. Okay, let's get to our segment. Unbelievable, it's going to be a quick one today. Boop! So we're talking earlier about the homeless industrial complex, about the fact that, man, we can't even help a woman with a baby who wants help, so who else are we going to be able to help? Probably not very many people, and that explains why we have record homelessness on our streets. We spend tens of millions of dollars and give it to government programs that don't do anything and spend it on bloated salaries. And there is perhaps no better example than the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, which was billed to us as the end-all be-all for the homeless crisis in our region, that we were going to look at it as a regional approach, and we were all going to come together to solve the homeless crisis. And instead, it turns out they just want billions of dollars to spend on their bloated salaries, and they're really not much doing much of anything. In fact, they can't even fulfill basic contract obligations. The head of the Regional Homelessness Authority resigned. It's a disaster. But I will tell you, they sent out a three-word tweet yesterday that sums up perfectly why the King County Regional Homelessness Authority must be disbanded. And it is because they cannot even identify the problem. Their tweet says, housing solves homelessness. Housing solves homelessness. And this is the entity that we're supposed to believe can solve homelessness, not only in Seattle, but in our region. And they believe that housing solves homelessness. Now, does housing help? Of course housing helps. If you have someone who's going through treatment for drug addiction, who's getting help for the underlying reasons why they ended up homeless in the first place, and they're doing great and you can get them housing, of course housing is part of the solution, but it is one of the final parts of the solution. It is what happens and what needs to be done when everything else has been done successfully. It is common sense. Common sense dictates, ideology, political party aside. When you look at what's happening on our streets, common sense tells us that this is not a housing crisis. This is a drug crisis, and this is a mental health crisis. And until you deal with the substance abuse, until you deal with the mental health issues, you could put these people in a freaking mansion, and it is not going to better their situation. They will just die in a mansion. So for you to say housing solves homelessness tells me that you don't belong within 500 yards of a single taxpayer dollar that's going to deal with the homeless issue. What a kindergarten interpretation of what's going on. Because you look at the word homelessness. Oh, homelessness. Well, if we give them a home, then we won't have homelessness. And that's why I don't even like the phrase homelessness. Because yeah, you have someone who doesn't have a home, they don't have a house, but that's not the reason, by and large, 99% of the time, that they're on the streets. I mean, we just showed the story of the woman with the baby that's homeless. Now, I think there's an example of someone where if you got a roof over their head, they could probably do a heck of a lot better, and at least the baby wouldn't be sleeping in a tent in dangerous situations. But the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, that woman has been on the news now twice over the last year. You haven't got her a home. So you can't even get the base level cases, the easiest cases. You can't even solve them. And so I'm sorry, housing solves homelessness? It's like kindergartners are in charge of the homelessness response. It's like you go to a kid and you're like, hey, this person is homeless. How do you think we can help them? The kindergartner's like, well, you could give them a home. That's literally, we have children running the King County Homelessness Authority and being given billions of dollars of our money to do nothing, to do nothing. It's time to dismantle the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. It is time to give money to only proven solutions and only after they've proven that the solutions work. And I think let's start by demonstrating that we can get a woman with a baby into a better situation than on the side of a road in a tent in Ballard. Absolutely ridiculous. Disband the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. Do it today. Okay, I've been talking about my friend. Oh, God. We got to stop putting Sell with Wes after stories about homelessness.
Yes, we do. You're right. I missed it.
All right, you know what? We'll do national news first. We'll skip. We'll come back to you, Sell with Wes.
I like that idea.
Thank you. Let's dip outside of Washington State for a moment. Pete Buttigieg. I was a Pete Buttigieg fan.
A big fan.
I was a big fan when he was running for president. This is like before I was red-pilled and stuff. Just because I really I like someone who is a good, confident communicator. He's so highly intelligent. I would never take that away from Pete Buttigieg. He is a really, really smart guy. And you can tell that he just absorbs information really quickly. And I like that about him. I admire that about him. And then he got this job as transportation secretary, and I feel like he's just bought into all the kind of woke nonsense. And to me, it just chips away at his intelligence a little bit. So anyway, he did this long sit down with Time magazine. And it's interesting, you know, they filmed it, and you've got all the people from Time just sitting around, hanging on his every word, as they do with any, like, Democrat. And Pete Buttigieg in this interview is talking generally about how he thinks this is a really scary time for LGBTQ people. And he's gay, and he's, you know, and I think Pete and his husband have suffered some really horrendous attacks because of their sexuality and the fact that they had a child. And did they have a child, Nicole, via surrogate, or did they adopt?
I believe surrogate.
Surrogate, yeah.
I think two. Don't they have two now?
Which I have no issue with. Like, of course, no. Like, if you're going to be a happy, healthy home, I don't care if you've got two moms, two dads, a mom, that's fine. And I think that he was really viciously attacked online over that, and in such a grotesque way. But I vehemently disagree with the characterization that this is one of the most dangerous times in history for the LGBTQ community. Do you have some, like, a small segment of people who are very vicious? Yes, and they have more of a platform and an anonymous way to do it via Twitter and other social media, etc. But anyway, so Pete's getting into that and his opinion that this is a really dangerous time, which I happen to think it's just because there's such wild crap happening. I mean, some of the transgender issues we've talked about, the transgender influencer who was at the White House with her boobs out, shaking them everywhere. Like, that's why people are like, this is getting absurd, and they're speaking out more about LGBTQ issues, and maybe that's why he feels that way. But anyway, he was saying in this interview with Time that he thinks that people focus on those cultural issues and the LGBTQ issues and the transgender issues because, like, they're not smart enough to engage in conversations on other policy issues. Here's a clip.
I think it's safe, especially right now when you have one side that has a maximalist commitment to tearing down every norm and law they don't like. So where does that put us? And by the way, why is it happening? I think it's happening because there are some people who find it easier to pick on really vulnerable young people than to explain why they voted no on money for roads and bridges or stood in the way of $35 insulin or are insisting on making it easier for wealthy people to cheat on their taxes by starving the enforcement resources that would have helped take care of that. They don't want to talk about that stuff. So they do this instead.
Well, yeah, but I could say the same thing for a lot of Democrats, including the president, including some of our congressional delegation, who they want to scream MAGA, MAGA Republicans in every tweet and every speech and fearmonger over MAGA Republicans so they can avoid talking about some of the issues they want to avoid talking about, like safety, like what's happening at the southern border, like homelessness and what's happening across the West Coast. So Pete Buttigieg can say that and say, here you have Republicans focusing on these deeply controversial cultural issues because they don't want to talk about roads and bridges. They don't want to talk about the cost of insulin. Democrats do the exact same damn thing. They do it with MAGA Republicans and public safety issues. And so you can stand there or sit there on your high horse surrounded by Time magazine people who are like, oh, this guy's so great. Yeah, speak to us. But you're being just as disingenuous. And, you know, I used to believe that there are, and I still believe there are some culture wars issues that are a distraction. I really do. As much as we talk about the culture wars on this show, but I think until we can push past this period of insanity in our country, where, like I said, we've got, you know, trans activists invited to the White House, taking their top off, and, you know, jiggling around their boobs and where we can, you know, we're allowing men, you know, the erasure of women and saying that, oh, there's no problem I can see with biological males being put in a prison cell with women, or there's no problem I can see with biological males competing against biological women in sports. So I think there's some culture wars that point to the true level of insanity that we have gotten to in this country where some crap just does not make sense. And I think that we have to push through that. And I think we have to discuss that. And I think we have to put some light on that. It doesn't mean we can't simultaneously talk about the difficult issues, like he says, like transportation issues, like taxation, like what's happening at the southern border, like the crime crisis that we're in. But it goes both ways, Pete Buttigieg. You just continue to disappoint me because you are becoming what I thought you were against, what I thought you were opposed to. Bumming me out. Okay, now we've been talking about my friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, awesome real estate agent. And he was sharing with me some stories via email yesterday about people who, he had this woman who got like $150,000 more for her home than she thought she was going to get. And they didn't even know if it was going to be sellable. And it was such a great success story because Wes Jones and his team have an awesome marketing strategy where they're going to get the most possible eyeballs on your listing locally, internationally, so you can get the highest possible price, which is what every home seller wants. And he said, despite ups and downs in the markets, he does see a window of opportunity for home sellers.
There's some pent-up buyer demand because buyers really went on strike starting last August and nothing happened. I should say very little happened the rest of the year. And it feels like we're getting back to your traditional seasonal real estate periods where a lot of home sales happen in the spring. So pent-up buyer demand, not a whole lot of options for buyers to purchase home, means that it's a great time to sell a home if you have to do something.
Yeah, so if you're in the market to sell your home, check out our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Super easy to remember, sellwithwes.com. A better way to sell your home. Okay, let's get to your comments, questions from the live stream today. Two Ladies Midwest Adventure says, quick question, is Daryl still part of the crew? Yeah, he's usually in the comments.
He hasn't been lately because he has another job as well. And usually it's more if we're having issues and I'm screwing something up over here that he has to pop on.
You rarely screw anything up. It's usually just technology works against you, which we're getting better at that. Things are going great. You're still not ready to go on camera?
Well, I'm okay with it. I just don't linger.
Your eye
on
looks.
Camera.
Show people your eye. It's looking much better.
That's some makeup.
The
but
swelling
I still think
is
I look
down.
Dead.
I mean, the swelling's down. It's interesting though how your black eye like migrated, like all the blood pooled in your face. So this whole side of your face is like yellow when you don't have makeup on.
It's very gross.
But it looks so much better. The swelling has gone down. Yeah, Daryl's still part of the crew. In fact, Daryl's going to be Nicole
in a couple weeks.
In a couple weeks, you're going on vacation.
Yes.
And so Daryl's going to be Nicole. So yeah, he's still part of the crew. Yeah. Daryl will always be part of the crew.
And
he's the original.
He pops into comments occasionally, but like we said, he has a couple jobs. So
yeah, he's a busy man. Yeah. He's a busy man. Matthew said, I heard a snort. Money? No. Did I snort?
I think maybe you did when you were talking about the Wes Jones ad. So I think you might have snorted there. And I am working on a snore jar. So I'll bring that in tomorrow.
All right. Let me see if I got a dollar in my... Okay, well, all this can be my snort jar.
We had multiple people mention it, so there you go.
Dollar in the snort jar for We Heart Seattle.
There you go.
You're welcome, Andrea. So that's not a snort. Okay, anyway. Okay, on the shooting in Seattle, just horrifying. Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. And I always think about the officers too who show up, first responders and the paramedics to something like that, and the doctors. I know that she was taken to Harborview and just, oh, breaks my heart, the work these people do, and then to watch them vilified, that's what makes me so angry. Anyway, Spencer said, crickets from Inslee and little Bob Fergie. Yeah, I haven't seen anything. Nicole, do you want to dip quick into Bob Ferguson's campaign?
I'm looking around. I hadn't Twitter seen anything haven't yet. Seen anything but... yet. Mm-hmm.
Kyle said, our first child is due in 3 weeks. I can't even imagine the loss for the soon-to-be father left behind after the shooting. Breaks my heart. Yeah, and we don't know. I don't know if it's been confirmed that that was the father of the child in the vehicle. So there's so much information that we really are still waiting on. But again, I mean, you know, I could be shocked and it could be, turn out to not be random, but I highly doubt that given the circumstances. Highly right. unlikely. On the Cho story, the woman with a one-year-old infant in a homeless encampment, Kathy says she's an addict. CPS needs to, I'm not going to say that because I don't know that she is. I have no proof that she's an addict. She's saying she's not, so I don't want to accuse her of something that she's denying.
I will say, even if that is the case and she's not doing drugs, there's obviously something preventing her from getting someplace that will help her because there are places out there. I know mm-hmm. of many. And so I don't know if she doesn't have an address. There's something preventing her. So I do think it's not a good situation for a baby. Right. So I'm also disappointed with CPS because I'm not saying take the baby from her, but they should have stepped in a long time ago. This baby is sleeping outside in the freezing temperatures. I mean, yeah. It really does get cold. I mean, it was freezing just a few weeks ago. And so I don't understand why this is being allowed by CPS, by anybody in the city or in the county.
It is, and I do agree that there seems to be more to her story that
yes.
something's not quite adding up. But she seems to be, compared to homeless individuals who I've seen, she is clearly is not like severely mentally ill where she's incapable of operating, right?
Sure.
She's not like zombied out, you know, somewhere she remembered Jonathan Cho. She was able to carry on a conversation with her. So what the point I was making is she doesn't seem to be one of the most difficult cases, right? No. It shocks me that there wasn't some sort of meaningful intervention the first time Jonathan Cho did a story on
right.
it. When she was sitting there rocking her baby when it was just a baby.
Right. And I would like to believe that she has not been there the whole time. Like, I just can't imagine all winter long you raising a baby in that condition.
Well, she said that for like 3 months. She was in a church hotel. Had got her in somewhere mm-hmm. and she wants like a tiny house or a permanent right. hotel situation. There has to be. I would be freaking shocked. If there's not an update to the story by the time we're back on the air tomorrow.
Right.
I would be genuinely shocked.
Most churches don't kick people out, though. So they would make sure she had some place to go. You don't kick somebody out back on the street. So to me, there's a barrier that's keeping her from getting help. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm not sure why CPS hasn't stepped in. That's what's confusing me.
And I hate to just – I don't want to guess and, like, put things on this woman when I don't know.
Putting anything on her. I'm just saying there's a barrier somewhere because otherwise there should be help.
I agree. And we do need to think about the baby who can't do anything. No. Like they're just at the, and the baby doesn't know any better. You know, it's just a baby. And so he's probably like, oh, my mom loves me and I've got a blanket to sleep on and all this. But we also talked about how dangerous. I just showed there are two shootings this morning, three people shot. Seems like ties to homelessness in both of them. So that's not a safe, being on it in a tent on the side of the street is not a safe place. Like the statistics bear that out. It's not empathy. And so, gosh, it just is pissing me off, to be honest. H says, thanks, Jonathan, for checking on this mother and baby. I mean, I totally agree. You know what else pisses me off? You know, people vilify Jonathan Cho so much. You show me one other freaking blogger in Seattle that would pick up the second they get a text message that there's a mom and a baby in a tent and would drive across town to go check on them with the empathy that Jonathan Cho showed and would get on Twitter and make an all call to government entities to come out and help that woman. So I don't want to hear this bullshit about vilifying Jonathan Cho because he's showing you things that make you uncomfortable. I will die on the hill for Jonathan Cho.
Is he a little wild?
Yeah, he can be a little wild sometimes. He puts himself in crazy situations. Like, I get it. But he is doing the Lord's freaking work out there, showing what's going on. So anyway, yes, I will die on the Jonathan Cho hill if I have to. Casey says, I feel bad for her and the baby being in this situation. As a former meth addict, she has all the mannerisms and actions of a meth addict. She needs individual care also. And again, I hate to say like, oh, she's a former meth addict, because I just don't know anything about her. Mm-hmm. TZ said, where did the $1 billion Jay Inslee spend on homelessness go? Good question. Mugshot ESP. Where's the money going? I'm paying overbloated salaries for the industrial complex to not do a damn thing. Could not agree more. Todd says, the money goes to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, six-figure jobs. Yeah, when you look at the salary list of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, there's salaried positions making well into six figures that seems like made-up job titles, where I'm like, what do you do? It's insane. Money goes to King County Regional Homeless Authority, six-figure jobs, then moves up to higher-paying government positions. Yeah, these people. And then also, get rid of every single position in government and in the homeless industrial complex that has to do with equity. Think about that. Why are we focused on equity when you're talking about homeless individuals living in tents? They're all in a bad place. They're all in a bad position. So even within a group of people who are disenfranchised by the definition, you need to like further look at, oh, how can we be equitable to people living on the streets? I don't care what their skin color is. If they're homeless and you can help them, stupid. Rachel says, wow, I was gonna take a drink, but my water glass became my snort jar. Rachel says, I hate seeing this happen to the Olympus Spa. They don't deserve this. It's so unfortunate. And I hope, and I know this owner of the Olympus Spa has said, like, he's willing to appeal this as high as he needs to appeal it to the Supreme Court, because you're cutting this business out and you're just cutting its legs out from underneath it. And I agree that what if something happens at the spa? What if you got a perv who takes advantage of this ruling, goes in there to prey on women? Okay. Who's responsible for it then? If a woman gets hurt, who is responsible? Is the judge in Seattle, the district court judge who said you have to let them in, is that judge going to be responsible? Is the Washington Human Rights Commission who made the initial ruling, are they going to take responsibility? No, it's going to fall on the business owner. And that's just wrong. There has to be another way to deal with this situation. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? So I watched Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell yesterday speaking. He had a couple press conferences yesterday, but one of them, we played clips of it, was him talking about how this big announcement where he's coming out and he's going to talk about what they're going to do about the drug crisis. And his big announcement was that we're going to come up with a plan. It's like, here's our working group and we're announcing our plan with no possible timeline. We don't know when this plan is going to come forth. And it's like, where have you been? Where have any of you been? The homeless crisis or the drug crisis didn't just all of a sudden show its face last week. It has been here. And so just stupid, real letdown of a press conference. But then I was sent by Undivided viewer Steve, who sent me this clip of London Breed, the mayor of San Francisco. So London Breed, I think she was one of those woke far left activists when she took office. And she did a lot of things that I don't agree with. But she has went from woke to awake, insane to sane, because there's this they're having this, city hall meeting. And this white dude on the city council who represents the Tenderloin, which is the area in San Francisco that has the biggest drug crisis. And he's demanding to know from her what she's going to do to make sure that drug users aren't criminalized. And London Breed's response to this man. So London Breed is black. The man who's talking, if you're just listening on the podcast, you can't watch, is white. So I want you to listen to the exchange because it's magnificent.
Will you follow your own Department of Public Health's advice and end punitive policies specifically arresting and incarcerating drug users that increase fatal overdoses, or will you ramp up these strategies, ignoring the advice of public health experts and causing even more overdose deaths?
Mayor Breed.
Here we go. Another white man who's talking about black and brown people as if you're the savior of those people and you speak for them. I have a sister that I lost to a drug overdose in the city. I have friends and family members who have been lost in the Tenderloin with no aggressive action, no changes to policies. Have you ever spent time talking to any of those same black and brown people? The fact is, it's not just services. It's also force. A friend of mine who unfortunately recently died over liver complications, he said, London, if I didn't get arrested and if I didn't have Delancey Street, I don't know what I would have done to turn my life around. And so you can quote all these statistics all you want, but at the end of the day, you've never lived in it. You've never experienced it. You don't know what most of these people and their family members are dealing with. So no, I'm not gonna start using some sort of system based on what you suggested I should use. I'm gonna continue to make sure that we are providing treatment, providing compassionate care, but at the end of the day, when we need to make arrests because someone's breaking the law and need to be held accountable and can potentially be forced into treatment or services, I'm gonna do so.
Oh, I love it. Oh my gosh, so good. That's what Mayor Bruce Harrell should have said. That's what Mayor Bruce Harrell should have said. And like, I don't like when people make things about identity and she's like, another woke white man telling me what to do. But I'm sorry, the majority on the West Coast of politicians coming up with idiotic, hands-off policies, decriminalization, they are woke white progressives. We talk about the Olympia School District and all their equity initiatives that they're shoving down the throat of kids, woke white progressives. And so I'm sorry, as a Black woman who says, I've had family members who have died, I've had family members who have suffered in the Tenderloin in your district, sir, and she as a Black woman gets a little bit more leeway than someone else might get to put that woke white progressive in his place. And honestly, I think Mayor Bruce Harrell should do the same dang thing with council members like Lisa Herbold, who wants to decriminalize misdemeanors because they're all crimes of poverty. Like, no ma'am, no ma'am, insane. And so London Breed, you know, a little rocky start. I think she contributed to some of the crises that San Francisco is facing, but she has come around, and it is never too late to come around. And so I absolutely commend her for putting that man in his place. Glorious, glorious. All right, before we end the show today, a quick clarification, correction, if you will, on a story we talked about yesterday. So we played a video from a classroom, a math class in California, that kids were being shown a pride video and groaning about it and asking the teacher, why are you showing us this? Here's the clip.
Wow, Miss Clark. Why are you showing this to kids?
Hey, I'll warn you guys now, if you're going to be inappropriate, I will have supervision down and give all of you a Saturday school for next year. So knock it off.
Okay.
Yeah, so the kids were like, why are you showing kids this? And I totally agree. There's no reason to show children that. The one thing I want to correct is we said it looked like there was women in the video kissing. Apparently they weren't kissing. They were touching foreheads, coming really close to kissing, but not actually kissing. And somebody actually sent us the video that the teacher played so we could see it a little bit better. It was a video, like kind of an end of the year video created by students. And it talked about graduation and summer, and then it got into pride. So here's a clip of the actual video.
June is much more than the beginning of summer, but a conversation starter for acceptance, change, and love amongst each other. This is Pride Month. A former Edison student has had their sexual orientation change throughout high school, where she found some that helped her give community. She says, "The first kiss I had was with a girl. Most of my family supported me until my mother stepped in. She found a safe space with the people who are also like them. No matter what anyone says, be proud of who you are, and keep fighting." At Edison, we should make all students feel welcome here, no matter their gender or sexual orientation. So, if you're out and proud, closeted, or even just an ally, be proud of who you are. And most importantly, don't forget to love each other. Happy Pride Month.
Yeah. So some aspects of that video I'm okay with. Like, yeah, you should be proud of who you are no matter who you are. I take offense to the even if you're just an ally, even if you're just straight, you should still be proud of who you are. But the correction we need to make is the women weren't kissing. They were touching foreheads.
But I think that the other clarification is that the kids aren't booing over just seeing women put their heads together. I think it was to this video being shown to them, right? So they're annoyed with the woke video being pushed on them and
right.
And the celebration of Pride Month being singled out and things like that.
Yeah, because they're booing over the pride aspect of the video. And then they're like, why are you showing this to kids? And so it's about, mm-hmm. their booing is about more than just the women getting real close to right. each other. It's about like, why are you showing this to kids? So, and the kids obviously didn't like the video. That is their genuine reaction to the right. video. I just wanted to clarify that the women weren't actually kissing in the video.
And we don't disagree with the message you know, everybody should be kind and love each other. But when you're putting this in front of kids all the time, like it's indoctrination. You're trying to put these different ideas and values. You're trying to say it's only unique to be different like this, or, right. you know, you should be unique or different like this, or you'd want to be different.
Like,
and
it's cooler.
Like this.
It's cooler to be like this. Because when they say, even if you're only an ally, so that's why I say, even if you're only straight, you should still be proud. It's like, oh, thanks.
And I've been told that by kids in middle school and high school right now, that that's the only thing to do to be cool. That's how you stand out, is, you know, you identify as something different and you wear different clothes. And that's how, I mean, it's just silly. So yeah. I understand why the kids were booing.
Yeah. Todd says the video is no big deal. And look, the video itself is the most egregious thing. No, but it's not. The reason we played it yesterday is because the kids were revolting against it.
Right.
The kids were booing it. And that kind of, it was a follow-up to the conversation that we were having about the Olympia School District and adults pushing the equity and all of this stuff down kids' throats. And I was like, do kids even want this?
Right.
And we played it as an example of, there are some kids who are like, this is too much. This is getting to be ridiculous. And so it's this question about, is it being led by adults or is this being led by kids?
Right. And I also think in that video, they talk about this, a girl who was fluid about her gender and blah, 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 all through high school. Didn't know she liked girls or boys. And I'm like, I don't think you have to know any of that in high school. Why are we telling kids they need to figure that out when they're, you know, 12, 13, 14? Give it some time. You don't have to like boys when you're 12 if you're a girl that doesn't want to like boys or whatever. So I think that it's the whole picture that's being pushed on them, that the kids are finally saying, enough.
Yeah, and Lieutenant Dan is right, because I think, Lieutenant Dan, you're the one who sent us the full clip of the video. He says the clip was 1 minute segment of a 10-minute video. Students, was it a 10-minute video?
Oh, yeah, it's very long. It's a whole episode of they've done it all year.
Students were being disrespectful during class. Teacher tried to handle it, and now it went viral among conservative circles out of context. Always important to see it in context. I wish I had seen the full video before we played it, but it doesn't change my opinion of the fact that the kids are like, why are you showing this to us? But yeah. Anyway, interesting stuff. Okay, thank you for being here. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder, we'll be doing a meet and greet on Sunday in Arlington at Elemental Cider Company, 2 to 4 p.m. Please show up, even if you can just drop by for a minute. We will have copies of Referendum 101 for you to sign if you choose to do so. Or you can bring, it's a kid-friendly environment. You can, and really kid-friendly, not when people say certain things are kid-friendly, and then they're most decidedly not, actually kid-friendly. So you can stay the whole 2 hours if you like and just hang out. Nicole, you'll be there for a little bit.
Yeah, yes, I will. So I'll probably be playing with the children.
Yeah, big kid person. So please join us Sunday in Arlington. We'd love to have you. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I promise tomorrow on the show we will have an update for you with the latest on the woman and her unborn child who were shot to death in downtown Seattle. We will also check in with Jonathan Cho overnight tonight to see if there's any update on the woman living in the tent with her baby. Just both disturbing stories, disturbing for different ways. So thank you for being here. If you've not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. You can support the show for as little as $5 a month. What a sweet deal. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back on the live show tomorrow.